From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Now, due to today's tragedy in Boston, Len Kasten and the incredible story of Project Serpo and ETs will be rescheduled for next Monday. I trust you understand. Well, where do I begin? Once again, America struck with another tragedy. They just don't seem to stop, do they? Two bombs struck near the finish line of the Boston Marathon, as many of you already know, turning a celebration into a bloody scene of destruction. The Boston Police Commissioner Ed Davis said tonight that the death toll had risen to three. Scores were injured in the scene, one of the dead, an eight-year-old little boy. Hospitals reported at least 144 people are being treated, 17 of them now in critical condition. 25 in serious condition. At least 8 of the patients are children. At least 10 people injured had limbs amputated, according to a terrorism expert briefed on the investigation. Doctors are pulling ball bearings out of people in the emergency room, said the expert, suggesting the bombs were designed to propel shrapnel. Several of the patients treated at Massachusetts General Hospital suffered injuries to lower limbs that will require more operations in the coming days. Some injuries were so severe, amputations were necessary. In Washington, President Barack Obama vowed any responsible individuals, any responsible groups, will feel the full weight of justice. Now, the attack near the marathon's finish line triggered widespread screaming and chaos, of course, shattered windows, barricades that sent smoke billowing into the air at the Copley Square. The blasts, the two of them, 50 to 100 yards apart on a stretch of the marathon course, lined with spectators cheering runners through the final yards of a 26-mile, 385-yard endurance feat. Federal authorities are classifying the bombing as a terrorist attack, but it's not clear yet whether the origin was domestic or foreign. A federal law enforcement official told CNN that both bombs were small and initial tests showed no C4 or other high-grade explosive material. Now, this suggests that the packages used in the attack were crude explosive devices. Also, a picture posted on Twitter shows an individual walking on the roof directly overlooking one of the blasts at the Boston Marathon. Perhaps it means nothing. The picture of the mystery person was posted shortly after the terror attack on Twitter and raises the possibility that one of the perpetrators watched as the carnage was unleashed, but they're not sure. In a moment, Douglas Hagman from Homeland Security joins us, Homeland Security U.S. He will talk about this tragedy. We'll take calls with Douglas next hour. Now, during one of our prediction shows this year, a caller, Ryan, called into us and said that his wife had had a very prophetic dream of a bombing.
Oh, well, I was talking with my wife, and she was having some pretty vivid dreams that there was going to be, like, maybe a dirty bomb go off around, I'm thinking April 16th is the big day.
How ironic. In a moment, Douglas Hagman again, Homeland Security U.S., not affiliated with Homeland Security, joins us as we talk about this case. North Korea turned up the temperature yet another degree on its neighbors, warning that it would not give any advance notice before attacking South Korea. Here's Ryan Merle joining us, expert on these international affairs. Ryan, the rhetoric continues. Eventually, something's going to happen.
Yes, I think that's true, and especially in light of today's disaster and atrocity, North Korea is going to want to bring attention back on them. And so my question is what Kim Jong-un is going to be planning on doing in order to make that happen.
Now, they celebrated the birthday of Kim yesterday, and he seemed to be all ecstatic and happy. But there's something loose in that kid's head, Ryan.
Right. It's been reported that British intelligence believes he suffers from severe hypertension. And then on top of that, you have to remember he's a dictator. And just by her very definition, that makes you a little bit crazy. And he's surrounded by advisors that will only tell him what he wants to hear, otherwise they'll get shot. So the potential for a ton of misinformation coming his way, resulting in him making a miscalculation that spirals things out of control, is really very high.
Robin, and Ryan, you've got a new website. Why don't you give us that URL?
Sure. It's clarionproject.org, and that's where we monitor radical Islamic activity around the world, including in the United States.
Great. Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it. China reported another death and three new infections from a new strain of avian influenza, which is known now as the H7N9, bringing the total death toll to 14 there and the number of infections to 63. They're all baffled. I still think this is something that was concocted in a laboratory and somehow got out. A kidney grown in the laboratory has been transplanted into animals where it started to produce. It's working. Not well, not as good as a real kidney, but it's doing okay. You can see the picture of it at coasttocoastam.com on our highlights reel. Engineered kidneys are less effective than natural ones, but you know what? If you need one, it's better to have that. Gold plunging more than 9% to its lowest level in over 2 years, and the biggest one-day sell-off in decades as the global tumble in commodities gained steam. Gold for June delivery losing more than $140 an ounce. The trade well below $1,400. From its record high, it's fallen 29% from September of 2011. Craig Smith, of course, expert in many tangible forms of assets, also the author of the Great Debasement book. Craig, what's going on with gold? Are people just scared right now?
Well, George, let's keep in mind what you're seeing happening is not happening in the physical markets. It's happening in the paper markets, and there's a big difference. We saw going into the London Fix today, 155 metric tons of gold on paper hit the market, George, but responded immediately by the central bank buying of 55 tons of physical gold. So I don't want to lose your listeners with all the minutiae, but suffice to say the dynamics have not changed. We still have the big deficits. We still have the big debt. We're still printing $1 trillion a year. As we talked about in the Great Debasement, the financial repression is still on. So the reality is, yes, we saw this sell-off, but it's not in the physical markets, George. The physical markets are red hot. We talked about this at thegreatdebasement.com about how we would see the Fed use anything they could to get that price down once it hit 1900 in 2011. But fundamentals are still very solid. Long-term, gold still looks very, very good.
And how about silver, Craig?
Silver, you know, George, I don't follow it that closely, but I can tell you it will be sympathetic to the movements in gold. I think, you know, we've always referred to silver as the poor man's gold. It is a tremendous value, George. I got to tell you, I was shocked when I saw these sell-offs. It reminded me of 79.80. I was there when it happened. But, George, keep in mind, in 79.80, we had an $858 billion national debt. Today, we have a $16 trillion national debt. And we're printing $1 trillion a year at $85 billion a month by the Fed. So the fundamentals haven't changed, George. We're seeing this happen in the paper markets. Your listeners should be advised to that. Do not panic, because all you're seeing are the weak paper hands getting out. Why did central banks buy 536 metric tons of gold last year? Why have they amassed 1,100 metric tons total? Why did they step in and buy 55 metric tons today? Because gold is still rock solid.
All right, Craig, thank you so much. Craig's website, part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. The name Frank Bank, do you know it? Probably not. But if I said he was lumpy on Leave It to Beaver, you just might. Well, he has passed on, 71 years old. He played Wally's dim-witted sidekick on the popular television show in the 1950s and 60s. But he found himself so typecast, he decided to quit acting and became a very successful financial broker. And one of his co-stars, Jerry Mathers, of course, Beaver, became one of his best clients. In a moment, Doug Hagman joins us as we talk about the tragedy in Boston today. Doug's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Doug Hagman, of course, private investigator, director of the Northeast Intelligence Network, member of the International Counterterrorism Offices Association. Douglas, where do we begin, my friend? Another day, huh?
Hi, George. Thanks for having me on. And I got to tell you, it's been quite a day. You know, first we start out with the economic news, and then isn't it something how quickly our lives can change and how quickly our attention can be diverted to a tragedy like this? Of course, this tragic bombing in Boston, series of bombings. And my goodness, you know, where do we begin?
Yeah, let me ask you this first, because I've been getting strange emails all day from people with their own theories and things, screaming about a false flag. We don't know anything yet. We don't know if this is domestic or international. We don't know if this is the work of an individual lunatic or some kind of organized terrorist plot. We don't know that. But the Boston Globe apparently tweeted sometime today that there was a bomb squad running controlled explosions on the same day that this occurred in Boston. I find that strange and ironic, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm glad we started out with saying that there are so many things we don't know, because that's just it. And I look at this in the as an investigator through the perspective of an investigator. 30 years doing this, this is the way you have to look at it, and look at it in such a way, in a very sensible way, going over the things that we know, and then identifying what we don't know and working from there. But it's so easy. The emails that you mentioned, isn't it very easy, and as well as telling, that as a society, as a people, as a nation, we're gun shy. We're not wrong to be gun shy about the official stories or the official accounts being told by the government, because in the past we've been lied to so often, and now it's you just don't know what to.
No, you don't. It's like the boy who cried wolf, Doug. It is so sad that you just cannot accept whatever government tells you anymore.
Exactly.
As the story. I mean, I happen, you know, I had all kinds of theories emailed me today. Let me tell you just a few of them. One was, and as you know, I'm a supporter of handguns and guns and concealed weapons, but I got a call from someone who also is a supporter of guns, but he said this could be a wacko who supports guns so much that he wants the world to know that mass killings can be done without a gun. So, you know, that was a theory that nobody's talked about, but it's out there, as bizarre as it might sound. What do you think of that?
Well, I think it shows that people are thinking outside of the box. Regardless of what I would think of the theory, the fact that you've got people that are thinking outside of the box is a good thing, because it shows that they're not accepting just whatever might appear on the television screen before them.
Right.
But having said that, you know, the facts that we do know are pretty substantial in terms of, at least the first segment of this, if we break it down into segments, of course. You mentioned something earlier, or at the beginning of this, where you said there was a drill that was taking place.
And the Boston Globe apparently tweeted that today.
Yeah, exactly. And it was prior to the event. And this was verified, authenticated by a University of Mobile the professor, I believe it was, a participant in the marathon, who said that at the beginning of the marathon, there was just an extraordinary amount of police presence and bomb-sniffing dogs. And over the loudspeakers, there were announcements being made, you know, this is all normal, this is an exercise, don't worry about this, and even reports that we have and have authenticated.
That was before the actual bombing.
That's correct. And, you know, once again, we as a nation, as a people, understand that we've been gamed before, we've been conned before, you know, so we're not wrong to be gun shy. I understand the desire, you know, by people to be first out with the story, for example, and I understand the gun shy aspect of things, but we have to, you know, take things and sift through the actual events. But this is true. You had an event that actually fits a template of previous bombings. That's a little bit disconcerting. Now, whether or not that this has any basis for this particular event remains to be seen. We can't jump to conclusions, but it certainly ranks up there as extremely odd. And even as the last explosion, before the last piece of glass hit, according to the information we have, the announcement about the training exercise was still going on, or was going on at that time as well.
Well, and I haven't heard mainstream media talking about this exercise. I mean, whether it has anything to do with this or not, it is ironic. And as you know, I don't believe in coincidences. It just happened at the same day. Now, wasn't there also a drill in London during the bombing on that subway train?
Oh, absolutely. We've got plenty of examples. We have the London bombing where there was a concurrent drill, a bomb drill in the very same location as the bombing.
It's just weird.
Yeah, the Murrah building, and even if you want to take it to the level of 9/11, you had the NATO exercises off the East Coast and so on. So you know, once again, I am not ashamed to be a bit gun shy about what we're looking at here and questioning the official narrative.
And what might we be looking at? Because officials say no one is in custody. We have no idea who or why. Yet we heard an earlier report that a Saudi national, some 20-year-old, had been detained, might have been one of the injured. You've got a picture you supplied us that we have up at coasttocoastam.com of police near someone who's on his knees as if he's been detained or arrested. What do we know about this?
Well, that's a very interesting question. What do we know? We know that it was reported initial reports were that a Saudi national was hospitalized, actually with some severe burns, and was a suspect, or at least tentatively identified as someone who was bringing in backpacks, multiple backpacks, to the locations where these two bombs went off. And we do know, by the way, that there were two bombs placed anywhere between 50 to 100 yards apart that were detonated remotely by a cell phone, they believe. So it was a remote detonation of two. They call them crude explosive devices, but you know, nonetheless, they did the job. And of course, these were anti-personnel bombs, or they had
right.
shrapnel and what have you.
They reminded me of the old days back in the 70s. When pipe bombs would go off during the Vietnam War, people would protest, and pipe bombs where they filled up pipes with nails, and they blew up, and they scattered the nails everywhere, Doug.
Exactly, and you, of course, you know, I've talked to interviewed numerous people during the days of the Weather Underground. You had explosions, well, one in the San Francisco Police Department that killed a sergeant. And left the family fatherless and you know, without a husband. That was designed in the same fashion. That is to take out as many people as possible. We're seeing the same thing here, and of course, we're seeing the same thing overseas. They're especially in Israel, where they're designed to cause as much mass casualties as possible. And it's interesting that we also know that there could be as many as five devices. The information we have on pretty good authority right now, there are three additional devices. One that was found at a nearby intersection, St. James, on St. James Street. And I found this extremely interesting. One device that was found outside of the area in Newton, Massachusetts, which means that this would suggest a larger plot, if you will, or a larger operation.
Could be a couple people. Maybe. Who knows?
Who knows? But the fact, my question is, how did they know to look to Newton? And how did they find
that? Yeah, how do you find that? And you know, people just looking for anything suspicious. Doug, I also want to, however, pass my incredible compliments to the first responders out there in Boston and to the people who were injured and involved in this tragedy, helping other people. I've got to tell you, when the going gets rough, Americans step up to the plate. And I mean, just to be able to see them and witness them to, you know, holding people and doing whatever they do, the emergency medical responders, the hospital attendees. I mean, these people did incredible work today.
You know, I think we really have to drive that point home, because as Americans, I've seen some of the most horrific pictures today of the carnage, yet some of the most uplifting pictures, as you described, people helping others and running to the source of the explosions rather than running away. the bravery of the first responders and, of course, their targets as well, especially with these multiple devices. Who knows if perhaps one of those were meant for them. So they're taking an incredible risk and doing a fantastic job. So, I've got a lot of first responder friends and police officer friends. I got to tell you, they put their lives on the line every day.
Doug, we're going to come back and talk more about this very tragic day in Boston. Next hour, we'll take phone calls with you. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Douglas Hagman with us for the next hour and a half. We'll take calls with him next hour. Douglas, question, how can the federal government say this is an act of terrorism when we just don't know yet? Case in point, when somebody goes into a school, a kid goes into a school and shoots the whole place up, he's not a terrorist. He's a sick individual. He's a murderer. He's a criminal. In this particular case, we don't know if this individual or groups, let's assume it was an individual for a moment, we don't know if he was just merely a sick individual who wanted to hurt people. So how can you say it's an act of terrorism?
Well, that's a great question. I think it really boils down to the definition of terrorism. And I would classify terrorism more as a tactic rather than a target or even, well, anything else. And in this particular case, based on the various aspects, the attempt and the successful attempt at mass casualties, the subsequent fear that this has caused, certainly it would fall within the accepted definition of terrorism. Now, the motive for that, whether it's because of some foreign policy or some other matter, is something entirely different. So to call it terrorism, I don't really have a problem with that as long as the motive is properly identified beyond that. Because certainly to the people at this location, just as they were various other locations, Ground Zero, 9/11, and so forth, it was definitely terrorism to them. They were terrorized, and
sure,
again, by definition.
Sure.
But again, separating it from the motive, that's where we come in.
See, but when the government calls it terrorism, to me, it means that they're saying there's some kind of heinous plot behind all of this, and you know they just haven't taken it the next step.
Well, and I agree with that. In this case, however, I would give them a little bit of room here simply because of the way this was conducted, the fact that there were multiple devices, the type of the way that these devices were detonated, carry all the markers of what we would classify as a normal terrorist attack, and that's a even to hear me say that normal terrorist attack is chilling by itself. But
this could be a guy. Let's just say it. This could be a guy, for example, who worked for the city of Boston, got fired or laid off, and he's ticked off.
Oh, it could very well be. Yeah, we have to go back to the basics, the who, what, you know, when, where, why, and how. I understand what you're saying there, and I think that to parse the terrorist angle here is, and that's why in some cases the government, I should say, has not come out and labeled something as terrorism, even though it is obvious or would appear obvious to the most rational and sensible person that it would be terrorism. So, and I think that there's also a legal classification, a legal reason for that as well. Because that would denote, just as we would say with an enemy combatant versus a defendant. We're getting into some semantics there that I think that would warrant different classifications, different handling by different agencies. Now, I noticed that they called in the FBI on this, of course, as well as they should, and other federal agencies under the umbrella of the Department of Homeland Security. So certainly this... As we progress through this investigation, and I think it's important, George, that people should realize, or people should give the workers, the investigators, the opportunity to investigate. I think we need to do that. Let them do what they're getting paid to do.
Well, but in this era, Doug, of social networking, that's almost impossible.
Well, that's true. You've got 24/7 news, and I happen to think, you know, back in during the Cuban Missile Crisis, what that would have looked like in the era of social networking, you know, the exponential fear factor that would bring upon us. And you know, as I'm here with you tonight, I'm watching, or I can see on my monitors here in my office, where 24/7 news coverage, replay after replay of the bombing and the same footage over and over again. And there's a very traumatic, dare I say, mind control aspect to this, a very trauma-based mind control part of this. But that goes into a different realm.
When do you think these two bombs, or if there's any more, but these two were planted? I mean, could that have been a couple days ago? Would it have been this morning? What do you think?
Well, interesting question. And the answer to that is simply, I don't know, but I would suspect that it would have been very close relative to the detonation time. Especially when you had according to authorities, you had a sweep of that area before the race, and also of course a sweep of the area by the bomb sniffing dogs at the starting line too. But normally and historically, it would not be very far from the actual time of the event.
Well, and these were not bombs. These were crude, as you know. These were not the kind of bombs that a true international terrorist would use. I mean, they have the capability of using plastic in anything they want, and they could have done some serious damage out there, Doug. It's a miracle that so far only three people are dead, honestly. I mean, we've got 17 critical. That will probably go higher. It's a miracle we didn't have more people die.
Well, right, exactly. And you know, of course, I'm not privy to exactly the exact positioning of these devices. And you're correct. I mean, there's certainly a lot more potent explosives that are accessible in the military market or militarized market that one could get their hands on. Now, having said that, I still wouldn't discount the. It's certainly not a nation or state sponsored event in my estimation, my professional view. So, you're correct in what you're saying there. But boy, I mean, they were effective in their shock and awe, if you will.
Of course. And that tells you again how vulnerable we are as a nation to just about any event. You know, major cities across the country are stepping up security. I don't know why they don't do this all the time, but yeah, I know here in Los Angeles, they're concerned about some specific spots. So, you know, they've increased security there. But, I mean, we need to be vigilant all the time. It's unfortunate that whether there was one person or many involved in this, there doesn't appear to be any eyewitnesses to the individual, at least at this point.
Well, I think there are. I do believe, just from what we've been hearing from our sources, there are eyewitnesses. In fact, there is reportedly some security footage that we may or may never see. I don't know. But they had cameras all along the finish line. And that brings up another interesting point, where these two devices were placed at that location. That's a very high density in terms of population, with both spectators and participants of the race. And that said, so I truly believe, based on that alone, in the position of cameras at the finish line to capture the event, I think that was an intentional placement there, especially with the cameras to capture the, you know, because a hallmark signature of somebody of this, with this intent.
Well, you want attention, you do it at the finish line, whether wherever it is, home plate, you name it.
Exactly. So in looking at that, the totality of facts that we do know, really, to me at least, seems like this was very well coordinated, very well planned, and somehow, and I stress it, somehow, managed to escape the vast security surrounding this event. I mean, this is an iconic event, this marathon. You know, you're talking about 23,000 people that, you know, runners, and another half a million people as spectators. So that said, you know, it's not a small little deal here. It's regardless of the size of the devices, it's really kind of, it makes a huge statement, a huge impact on the psyche of our country. And there is so much that we are looking at right now. You know, we're in so many areas, so many different things are taking place with the currency, with the foreign policy, with the gun confiscation, gun legislation, everything. Yes, attempts. Yes. Attempts. Yeah, all of this together. I mean, and I'm wondering if we shouldn't be expanding our view, not to look at this necessarily in the vacuum, and just look at this as perhaps something, you know, in the context of everything else that's taking place.
Well, and the sad part, as you pointed out earlier, too, is that everything now is looked at as a false flag. And even though some may be, I'm not going to rule that out by any means, it's unfortunate that we just can't trust government. And everything is suspect.
Well, exactly. And I do believe, seriously, I think that the whole, I mean, we've got markers that fit a pattern that we've seen before here, such as the drills, the concurrent drills that were announced and took place and such. So, you know, once again, I think we're right to be a little bit questionable, because we've been gamed and conned before. So, but then again, on the flip side of things too, I mean, look at the Olympic park bombing some years ago, where the FBI and officials zeroed in on one person because he fit a certain profile, ruined the man's life. I mean, basically ruined the guy's life.
That was a security guard they went after, wasn't it?
Exactly. I mean, basically, they found out the salt of the earth kind of guy that did everything he was supposed to do, went in and helped. But
and it was Eric Rudolph was the real bomber. He was a kid at the time.
The Unabomber, I believe. Right.
Eric Rudolph was his name. Unabomber. Kaczynski. Eric Rudolph.
Right.
Eric Rudolph was the one who was against abortion, and he just went nuts and did his thing.
Boy, that's terrible. I can't even keep the bomber straight here. Exactly. So, you know, we can do a lot of damage by not having sufficient data, and by not allowing the investigators to do their jobs, and by coming out. And you know, I've seen just about everybody with a blog or with a microphone has come out and speculated as the motive, even to the extent, whether it be a false flag on the one side, all the way to the other side, by responsible syndicated journalists saying, well, you know, it's tax day, it's Patriots Day, and you've got this anger. So this anger from the conservative base, that was a true social networking message by a responsible journalist. So, you know, it seems like everyone has got their specific agendas that they're nobody can report just the facts anymore. It's like, man, they're colored with agendas. And that's what I think we really have to be careful with.
Well, I'd slap a $5 million reward on something like this, Doug, wouldn't you?
You know what? I don't. Yes, I would.
That's one of the only ways you're going to get some people to leak. You know, there's that old saying, there's never a secret. And let's assume this was done by one crazed individual, one. And he knows he can tell his best friend. And that best friend knows he can tell one best friend. I'm telling you, by the end of the day, 45 people will know that this guy did it. And if there was more than one, it's going to leak out that way, too. I would put a $5 million bounty on this guy's head, and somebody's going to come forward and say, you know, it's Joe Blow or, you know, a couple of them, and we're going to get them that way.
You know what? I agree. I do think that the working together, too, a reward system is very good. Now, that does attract a lot of things that you know, a lot of different elements there. However, it does have its place. But you know, with the number of cameras that were present there, and one of the pictures from one of our sources in Boston, we were able to take secure a photograph of a man that actually ran from the area, was caught in Boston Common Park, was arrested and by the Boston police. The information with that photograph was this was somebody who was running from the blast, was acting suspicious prior to the blast, and was subsequently arrested, as you see in that image that you have posted at Coast to Coast AM.
Well, you know what this individual, if he's on the lam here, might do, because he's so close to some of these other major eastern seaport cities. He just might travel along and do the same thing at other places. He could very well do that. Or government's not telling us everything. You know, if they come out and say this is true terrorism, you know, maybe there's something else going on here, Doug, that we don't know. I do find it ironic that our major cities, and even London now, you know, they're all beefing up security. Is there something going on we don't know?
Well, you know, the great question again, but I would look at this again in the context of all of the events, world events taking place. You've got blow-ups with North Korea. You've got the Iranian situation.
Iran has threatened to come here and do stuff.
Of course. So, you know, there are alliances that are forming, global alliances that we have never seen before, at least not in modern history, where any motive could fit. Now, of course, something, dare I say, this small relative to perhaps, you know, a tactical nuclear device, this would be a relatively small incident, not small to the people there by any means. However, once again, speaking relative, but you know, there are alliances to various countries by people, and they do things, and certainly this could be just as you described, but it could be part of the larger context. Think of the economic hit we're taking just by this, where they close down, they stop sports games, they close down methods or transportation. The economic blowback from this one incident to America is going to be extreme. And what if the next one happens on Wall Street?
Oh, I know. I know.
So, again, thinking out of the box just a little bit, not knowing the facts, but being allowed to speculate because, again, of the history, the pattern, the markers that we see, you know, we just don't know. But I think in the larger picture, George, I think we really have to look at everything and the fact that we are engaged right now in so many wars, many levels. But it's a multi-dimensional chess game we're
working. Can you imagine what our young people, what's going through their minds? From the tragedy of 2001 to shootings in schools to these events right now, can you imagine how scared these little kids must be? Because they just don't understand. All they do is they see this violence all the time.
You know, I think perhaps you and I of the same generation remember the trauma, if you will, of having to duck and cover under your desk because of a bomb blast, perhaps, you know, during the Cold War, the potential for a nuclear blast, but it was softened for whatever reason. It just seemed to be a softer type of feeling, and it's hard to describe. But today, you know, it seems to be the edge is much sharper.
Yeah, it sure is.
You're right.
I remember when we were eight and we would do these fallout shelter drills in schools. We laughed when we were eight, Doug. We thought it was funny. But then when we got to be 12 or 13 or 14 and we were still doing them, it wasn't funny anymore. You know, it was serious. It was scary. And, you know, it's something I think a lot of people are going through. There's no question in my mind, these people who went through this horror situation, they're going to need some serious therapy, don't you think?
Well, having been involved in certain aspects of the emergency response in my career, even before it was called post-traumatic stress disorder, I could tell you this. Yes. I mean, and the short answer is absolutely.
Well, Doug, we're going to come back and take phone calls with you in your final hour with us on Coast to Coast AM as we talk about the tragedy in Boston. The phone lines are open. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.